hello and welcome to the Majlis Central Asia podcast at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. I'm Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. For decades, radio has been an important part of our daily life. They have been main source of our information and entertainment. The importance of radio is as such that today, February 13, is celebrated as a World Radio Day by UNESCO. Role and place of radios, especially foreign radios, cannot be more crucial in Central Asia, where independent news has been sacred historically, which is even true today despite a rapidly changing world. But as world is going through a rapid change, the historical place and role of radios are changing with it. On today's Majlis, we plan to discuss traditional and current place and role of foreign radios in day-to-day life of our region. To discuss the subject, I have Bakit Bashimov, former member of parliament in Kyrgyzstan. Currently, he teaches at the Northeastern University. Bakit, welcome to the Majlis.
Thank you for inviting me to this very exciting program.
Thank you for joining us. Also joining us, Omid Babakhanov, who's the founder of Asia Plus, the first and the biggest independent news organization in Tajikistan. Omid, welcome to the Majlis.
Thank you for having me.
Very nice to have you from Prague. Bruce Panier is tuning in, who has extensively traveled the region in early 90s and currently edits Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog called Kishlak Awazi. Bruce, welcome to the Majlis.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you. Before to kick off, gentlemen, the debate, please be reminded and feel free to amplify, expand or disagree directly with points other guests are making. Please don't wait for me to prompt your question so that we have a lively debate today. With this, Bakit, let's start with you. You have seen both Soviet Kyrgyzstan and the process leading to its independence, and later you were part of the administration. Tell us, please, what role did the foreign radios play in your country before and after breakup from the Soviet Union?
I participated in the last in my life election to the Parliament of Kyrgyzstan 2007. And during 2 months, I traveled to all provinces of Kyrgyzstan, met with a lot of people with our team. And what I realized during these meetings, that when we ask questions from what kind of sources you are getting this information and what sources of information you are prefer to trust, and I got the answer, and majority of answers all about the Radio Liberty, about Azadlik Radios. When I ask the question, so why do you trust this source of information, that the answer was that they just usually offer very balanced views, and they try to take into account different opinions. And this is the clear evidence that radio has played a huge role in the life of ordinary people in my home country.
Omid, the same question to you. During the Soviet period, your national news sources were propagating what Soviet leaders in Moscow wanted people to hear. So what role the foreign radios were playing in those dark days in terms of lack of diversity of information?
I agree with Bakit, actually. Since Soviet times, radio has always been most important mass media in Central Asia, even more important than TV, I would say, because the region has been and continues to be predominantly agrarian, and people in the field cannot watch TV, but they can listen to the radio all day long. So, plus, it was impossible at that time to cover all the country, especially mountain country like Tajikistan, by TV broadcasting, while radio on medium waves has been able to reach almost every remote village. So radio was crucially important for Tajikistan. But that time, of course, we know that the radio and TV and all media, they were under tight control of the government, of Communist Party. So the only source of information, independent information, alternative information, has been broadcasting from foreign Western countries. It was people tried to somehow to catch frequency on their radios from Voice of America, from Radio Liberty, from Deutsche Welle to get any news to understand what is happening sometimes even in their own countries. Mm-hmm. So it was very important, and unfortunately, because of a rapidly changing situation in our countries in post-Soviet space, it's still very important, mm-hmm. and perhaps even getting more and more important, in particular in Tajikistan.
Mm. Bakit and Omid, this question goes to both of you. So please, can you share some of your early memories attached to radios?
I do remember when I was a kid during the Soviet times that radio really played a huge role in my personal life. Until now, I remember the early morning music inviting and programs inviting us to the physical exercise, and after that, very interesting programs. And later on, after the collapse of the Soviet Union and in the newly independent states, I at that time frequently traveled to all the countries of Central Asia. As Umid said, I realized that in many places, remote places, people prefer to radio because TV mostly are unavailable. And after that, you can see very interesting phenomena. It is when all generation, due to their habits from a Soviet time, they prefer these radio programs, getting information and news from these programs. And after that, they're trying to process it and to share with their fellow countrymen. A new generation, due to the proliferation of different radio stations, and while we're traveling, they try to get programs of new radio stations. But mostly, as I understood during my experience, people prefer of all generations. So this is unbiased, more balanced information. And therefore, I tend to believe that Radio Liberty of the Kyrgyz service and BBC of the Kyrgyz service, they are the main sources of more objective information.
Mm, thank you very much. Bruce, in early 90s, soon after the independence of Central Asia, you have been cruising everywhere in the region. Tell us some of your own accounts of people relying on radios, or radios playing any role in their day-to-day life.
You know, really, actually, most of the places I went, people were listening to the radios. Even when I was in places where they had, and they were few and far between, but even when they had TV, the kind of programming they had on television really wasn't that interesting. You know, it was really early. Everyone went from, all the republics had their own television facilities so they could do reports on their own, you know, what was happening in their Soviet republics, but now they were independent countries, but they kind of stayed with the same format, the same kind of programming. So, you know, you'd have the cultural shows and there'd be some music and some dancing, and of course there was always the news, and you know, and maybe they had some old documentary films or something like that, you know, at first. Later they got a lot of foreign films and dubbed over them, but it really wasn't that interesting. But radio, everyone was used to it, you know, and as Bakit said, you know, you could listen to the radio no matter where you were. So you could, if you had electricity, you could be out in the field and you could still have that on your porch somewhere in front of your house or something, and people could listen to it. I mean, I remember the Mayak, you know, Radio Stancia Mayak, all the time, because you could, I could always hear the hour. I knew that it was, you know, 1 o'clock in the afternoon or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, because I could hear the bells going off and the beep, 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 you know, Radio Mayak going on. So, you know, and it was more diversified programming. They had a little bit more freedom. I don't know, maybe because they had more variety possible or something like that. Like I said, television just didn't, they only had limited material to show. And so it got to be a little bit monotonous, whereas radio was a little bit, had a little more to draw from. So you would get not just the music, but the reports and, you know, and some interesting reports about what was going on from around the country. You know, again, if you're going to do a report from a village or some scene in the country, to do radio, you just need someone with a recording device and a microphone. Whereas if you're going to do television, you got to have the camera crew out there and everything like that. So radio seemed to get around a lot more. And it was just more accessible in the areas. I was working in mainly rural areas, so it was more accessible to the people out there than television.
Omid, talking about the Soviet era, Soviet leaders would not only call foreign radios, especially Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, or it is language services, as a destructive organization. They would even take measures against those who would listen to us or to them. Tell us, please, some of the examples from your own country.
I can recall my personal experience of listening to foreign voices, as I used to call them. It was 1986. That time, after graduating from university, I went to army as a military interpreter, and I served in Crimea, in Sevastopol. Yeah. And in April, the end of April, I lived there in one room with my roommate, translator from Ukraine, from Kyiv. So, and one day on April 26, I guess, in 1986, we were listening to Radio BBC, and it was military organization. It was and it was forbidden there, but because we were a translator, I was translator of Arabic language, and my friend was translator of English. We used to listen to this foreign voices, and suddenly we got in news about accident on Chernobyl nuclear power plant. If you remember, it was a disaster. And the problem was that my friend's wife in Kyiv that time was pregnant, and he was so worried about her because Soviet media that time, I guess about maybe 1 week or 10 days or 2 weeks, they were silent about this accident. And when we, as a being a young lieutenants, we went to our chief's commanders asking what happened there, because it's dangerous. It was explosion on a nuclear power plant. It's dangerous for the families living in Kyiv and around that area. And our commander said, don't trust to these foreign voices. It's just a lie. Nothing happened. And only after 2 weeks, Soviet media admitted that, yes, we had kind of accident, but everything is okay. So it was very, very significant moment, which I recall.
Very, very interesting. I remember stories about Turkmenistan that people would hide their radios from authorities and listen to Azatlik, the Turkmen Service of Radio for Europe, in a quiet and often a dark place where they could not be heard from outside. So why to take such a risk? What was it that people would like so much about it, Bucket?
Probably you remember one radio mate in Latvia, I hope, Web Spidola. I do remember that first I started to listen to foreign radio. It was late of 70s, beginning of 80s, and then I just graduated university, and after that I entered to the PhD program. And we got with this Web Spidola radio, and my friend, he introduced me to the Golos America, the Voice of America.
Yeah.
And it was for me some kind of informational shock, because when I got the analysis of events in the Soviet Union, and I just understood that that different opinions could be, and therefore it's interesting to know. But of course, trust to these sources and for information come later on, after the, let's say, getting information from different sources. And therefore, this is an attempt of Soviet, let's say, authorities to keep information, very important information, out of public attention. It was important for just survival of this regime. And it is important to keep people informed in a way how Soviet authorities understand the role of information in the life of this country.
Interesting. It's been 25 years since Soviet Union collapsed, but again, things in some countries did not change much like these days. Still, we are facing huge, huge problems in Turkmenistan. You know, our reporters are being harassed, and two of them currently in jail just because of reporting to Azatlik. So, Bruce, what is that the authorities are so afraid of radios in Central Asia?
Well, obviously, it depends on the country we're talking about. You know, in countries like Turkmenistan and Uzbekistan, for instance, they would prefer that people just listen to the state media, and they do, certainly in Turkmenistan's case, they do everything they can to prevent any outside media from getting into the country. They want the people to just listen to what the government is telling them is the truth. Very Soviet way of approaching the whole thing. But, you know, for that reason, the people want to know, I mean, they're already aware of the fact that certainly more than anybody else, that the government is probably not telling them all of the truth or maybe any of the truth at times. And so they really want to hear what is happening in their country, what's happening in the outside world, especially in their own region and in Central Asia, maybe Iran, Afghanistan, those places. So, but like I said, a lot of times what we report, because we're trying to give objective news based on, you know, a number of sources that we have, and it contradicts what the government is broadcasting as being the news. And, you know, it undercuts the credibility of the government because people start to realize that, you know, they're not getting the whole story, or maybe their government is giving them a very sanitized or even false version of events. So, yeah, you know, in countries like Turkmenistan and Uzbekistan, we still do have problems. Kyrgyzstan is obviously not such a big problem because they do let a lot of different kinds of media in. But Tajikistan, for instance, during the civil war, and certainly Umid would remember, they didn't really appreciate the fact that we were broadcasting. You know, those were tough days in the civil war. But I thought it was interesting that actually, at least according to the reviews that I sat on here in Prague, they were saying that you know, Radio Azadi, our Tajik service, was like one of the most popular sources of information because, you know, again, state media was broadcasting one version of what was happening, namely that things were going well for government forces, but Azadi was telling a more balanced version, and people could see, and they had relatives in this place. So the stuff that Radio Azadi was reporting, they could find out very quickly was in fact the truer version of events out there.
Umid, certainly this question goes to you because of your background as a newsman. What role did foreign radios play in your life as a journalist in Tajikistan?
First of all, when I started Asia Plus, I have to say that the Tajik authorities, they considered and still consider radio and TV as strategically important for their security. That's why they still control this field. It goes for foreign broadcasting as well as a local independent radios.
Right.
And for example, it was very simple to register a newspaper, for example, in Tajikistan, but it was impossible, and it's still impossible to get a license for radio broadcasting or TV broadcasting for private company. And for example, Asia Plus was waiting for 4 years to get its own license. Mm. But when we started, I was lucky enough to get an internship in Radio Liberty in Prague during a couple of months, and it was the best experience that time. And when we started our activity as Asia Plus, first as a news agency and newspaper and then FM radio, we always listening and monitoring news and features coming from Radio Ozodi, Tajik service of Radio Liberty, because I would say that this source of information, perhaps the main one for Tajik audience. Mm-hmm.
And I would like to join in to say that, in my view, on this issue is fundamentally educational. When you're asking why authorities in Central Asian countries, or let's say Russia and all post-Soviet states,
right,
they are about their, let's say, very questionable attitude to the radio and to any sources of information, especially if they are diverse. I'm saying that it's fundamental education, because all these leaders from all era, even young generation of leaders, they simply don't know what to do with the diversity of information, with the diversity of sources information. Why? Because their education and their knowledge are mostly, let's say, dogmatic. And they simply don't know how to process that information, how to deal with the very challenging information, and how to just among this is a diverse source of information offer their own version of reality. But also we have the second phase of this phenomenon. For instance, we can see that unfortunately the countries of Central Asia after 25 years of independent development didn't yet get the fact-based journalism, investigative journalism. For instance, in my home country, especially in Kyrgyz language, journalism, it's not fact-based. It's gossip-based. It's a rumor-based information and journalism. And therefore, it's very difficult to trust the sources' information. Therefore, you can see that scholars on Central Asia or international radio or TV programs, they are rarely cite the sources of information in a Kyrgyz language about what's going on in Kyrgyzstan. Therefore, I think it will take time, And if education improves, probably it will be possible to fix this problem.
Thank you very much, Bakit. As I said at the beginning, that UNESCO celebrates February 13 as the Radio Day. When UNESCO picks up something to celebrate, for some reason it makes me wonder whether this object is diminishing and this is an effort to save it. This leads me to another question. How did the place and role of radios change it with the rapidly changing world? We will continue discussing this and many other questions shortly. Hey everyone, before we get into the second part of the show, just a quick reminder that if you really like Majlis podcast, there's a real chance that you will also like my other radio show that's called Gandhara Podcast. The show discusses latest developments in Pakistan and Afghanistan from local perspective. And the podcast is published in every second week on Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty's Gandhara website. It's a totally must-follow discussion for foreign policy nerds with interest in the region. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast, we are talking about place and role of foreign radios in Central Asia, discussing the subject with me, Bakit Bashimov, former member of the parliament in Kyrgyzstan. Currently, he teaches at the Northeastern University. Umid Babakhanov, who is the founder of Asia Plus, the first and the biggest independent news organization in Tajikistan. Bruce Panier is joining us, who is the editor of Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty Central Asia blog called Kishlak Wazi. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis here in Washington, D.C. Welcome back, gentlemen. Now, as I just mentioned, world is rapidly changing. So does the habit of people as well as their needs. How has this affected role in place of radio, the traditional place of radio in their day-to-day life, especially talking about your country, Umid?
You know, in Tajikistan, in all post-Soviet countries now, it's for foreign broadcasters like Radio Liberty or BBC or Deutsche Welle or others, Voice of America, it's I would mention one very important dilemma which all of them are facing now. If they have to have their offices, correspondent bureaus within the countries and be under certain control by local governments, or they stay abroad and broadcast from abroad and be more independent. If you understand what I mean,
right.
When you have your representation, for example, in the country, a local government has a power to somehow to make a pressure on you. Don't touch this topic, don't touch this topic. I understand desire of chiefs of this representation, this radios, to keep their offices inside the country, but in this case, they limit their freedoms to cover that or this topic. But they, of course, they have more opportunities to get more news, having more correspondents inside. But on the other hand, having their offices inside the countries, they limit their possibilities to cover some sensitive topics.
So, Bakit, Kyrgyzstan has been an interesting case. I hear that presidents, political leaders often heard citing news from Azadtik, which is our Kyrgyz service. What do you recall about the place of radios from your time in the administration? How much would you rely on them, and what purpose did it serve for the administration, the ones who are ruling the country?
It goes to the authorities of Kyrgyzstan during different times, during the regime of Akayev and after Bakiyev, and today during the reign of Atambayev. I can say that the dominating trend is the of authorities in Kyrgyzstan is to use this radio as a tool of convenience. Hmm. If they get the positive information about themselves, they prefer to favor this information, even they refer to the sources of this information. If they just collide with, let's say, non-positive information about themselves, they tend to attack. And you can see that recently in Kyrgyzstan, where, when they're trying to marginalize Azatik radios due to, let's say, non-positive attitude to what is doing in administration of the president. And but when you ask the question about, let's say, the future, I think that if people in Kyrgyzstan will get, let's say, more access to the internet, and if it would be not so costly due to the proliferation of independent radio stations and the possibility for people to make their own podcasts and video programs, it can change, let's say, information area really, even unimaginable way. Hmm. And let's see what will happen in the next years. And because today, Kyrgyzstan, close to 30% only population has access to information. It's not enough, of course.
From your experience or news that you hear from your country, and I just want to get your opinion about the same question that I gave to Omid, how did the digital era affected the traditional role of radios in your society?
Of course, media landscape has been changed since during this last years. Today we have internet, mobile phones, and satellite broadcasting, and so on. So authorities still try to control media, but it becomes more and more difficult for them because today you can download podcasts, you can use your phone, and you can get news from, for example, Radio BBC or Radio Liberty to your phone, and you can read it on internet. Authorities still try to control. For example, they block websites, but due to new technologies, you can avoid all this blockage and you can get access to that news, which is very good.
Yeah, let's take Bucket's opinion on this. Bucket, in your country, Kyrgyzstan, how did the digital era affect the traditional role of radios in your country?
Yes, you can see that today when a lot of young people, they are releasing to a public their own podcasts, their own video messages, and in social networks, they are sharing this information. And therefore, in this situation, for the traditional journalism based on radio or TV, it's difficult to compete with them. Therefore, as I said, if they just pay more close attention to their quality of education, to their just best training, probably they will survive. Otherwise, for them to compete with the just increasing number of bloggers and people who are involved in this media will be very, very difficult.
Hmm. Bruce, effect of rapidly changing world to the radios. With the changing world, radios are obviously changing with it. Talking about our own radio, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, there has been a dramatic changes over the past several years, and you have seen these changes within. Though changes are dramatic, radio remains still one of our main platforms. What is your thinking about this strategy?
Well, obviously, you have to move with the times a little bit. And of course, you know, as you just mentioned, you know, we started taking the internet a lot more seriously about 15 years ago and posting stuff up on there. And we're also moving into, I think all the services do their own videos too and produce their own video shows. You know, that said, we've also found out as we've been moving along that I'll use Tajikistan as an example here, that although that's very good that you're on the internet and although you can, you know, put printed text up there and put videos and everything like that, it comes down to the provider of the, you know, of the source for your internet. And the Tajik authorities have been very good at shutting down and blocking sites when times are, when there's some sensitive issues in play in the country. It usually happens before elections, not just in Tajikistan, but again, using Tajikistan as an example, when there's unrest like there was in the Rasht in the gorge a few years ago. You know, they just shut down the internet and blocked everything out. Kazakhstan's done the same thing. Uzbekistan and Turkmenistan try continually to do that. You know, they're getting better at filtering stuff, but you know, then we found out that radio really does still have a place. You know, that it's not obsolete, because you can turn off the internet, you can block websites. But it's a lot harder to jam radio signals from coming in. So there still is a need to have the radio as well as the newer technologies.
Good points, Bruce. As Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, in 2016, I was just looking into our statistics. We reached to 27 million adults per week, and 10% of which is coming from Central Asia. And only in Kyrgyzstan, our Kyrgyz service reaches to 36% of the population per week. Though it's true, it is various platforms, obviously, but radio remains as one of the main platform of distribution. It shows that while world is changing, role of radio as a radio remains crucial in Central Asia. Bucket, why is this?
Because, as Bruce said, radio is still effective sources of information, and how it reaches people, how it touches their way of thinking is really still very effective. And I think that it will still, of course, for radio, it will be increasingly difficult to compete with new communication technologies. And therefore, here I see the problem of the quality of journalism based on radio.
We are approaching to end of our discussion today. Looking into future, so what future do you see in your country for radios? Just briefly, if you can.
I would say that the role of foreign radio stations, foreign broadcasters, today is getting even more and more important, even more maybe important than in Soviet era, because we see that the situation is getting worse and worse in some of our countries. And in such hostile environment, for example, in Tajikistan, it's almost impossible today to express some critical materials about the government, about the situation. That's its first factor. And second, we know that most of post-Soviet audience is under great influence of Russian state media. And in such conditions, I think that role of Western media, and in particular radio, is crucially important.
Bucket?
You said that your radio reaches 37%.
36% of the adult population per week in Kyrgyzstan.
Yes, 36. And you can see that it is less than 50%. And it's an indication that you have a lot of space for the development. And therefore, how to just reach more people, it is one of the interesting questions. And of course, you'll see the increase in competition between different types of radio. Of course, as Umid said, you'll see the increase in influence of Russian world radio. And anyway, people will have chance to compare. And therefore, if Radio Liberty, Voice of America, and local radio stations will just develop better, we'll be in a better position to compete with our sources of information. Anyway, I prefer not to demonize, let's say, negative influence of some biased radio programs, let's say from Russia, but say it's about diversity, and it's up to the people to make choice.
When talking about Central Asia, one thing is also important to bear in mind is that all five Central Asian countries regarded as a not free societies in Freedom House's annual Freedom Index, which means independent news in whatever form it is coming to Central Asia is vital for the people, and it will remain so, it looks like, from the situation in the region going forward. So, Bruce, final point from you before to end the debate.
Two things to mention. One, when there's problems in any of these countries, our listenership always goes up. When there's something really, really, whatever, not necessarily emergency situation, but when there's something very, very important, it can be security problems, it can be elections, things like that. Our listenership goes up right away. The other thing is that even though most of the governments don't like that we broadcast in there and that we provide information to their population, there are always people in the government officials who secretly listen to our programs themselves. Yeah. To find out what's going on, because of course they know better than anyone that state media is not covering the truth, and we hear from these people every now and then that said, yes, I do listen to your program, and I appreciated getting other facts that we weren't giving in our own country. So there's two reasons why radio is still going to be important for the people of the region and even officials in the government.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for insightful comments, Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia Bloc, Kishlak Oazi. Also, Bakit Bashimov, former member of parliament in Kyrgyzstan, currently teaches at the Northeastern University, and Umid Babakhanov, founder of Asia Plus, the first independent news organization in Tajikistan, for your time in thoughts and during today's show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mohammed.
Thank you. And thank you. And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.